Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 498, Saints Testimony Discussion, recorded live on July 30th, 2015. Hello everyone, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm.
And I'm your other host, Godzilla T.
And I'm the other host, Hossost.
And we are here talking about Saints Testimony, which is the short novel. However, it's really short, but it's not a novel. I forget what they called it in the update a while ago. But it's the latest Halo piece of fiction that came out from Frankie on Tuesday this past week. So we're going to be talking about that a little bit, since there's nothing else really big to talk about in the Halo scene right now. We had the HCS wrap-up last week, and talking with Towie, the coach of Evil Geniuses, we're going to try to have him on sometime after RTX to talk about their Season 1 and Season 2 victory and being the reigning champions of HCS for Halo 2 Anniversary, so that's going to be a lot of fun. But to join us tonight on our little discussion for Saints Testimony, we have Pins Halo. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
I believe this is your first time on as a formal guest. Is that correct?
excuse me. I know I filled in once with Godzilla when way back when Brent was unavailable, but it's been a while.
Been a while. All right. So, gotcha. So, it's not been your first time. All right. So, we don't need to do the whole history thing with you, at least. We're going to be pretty much rocking straight into Saints Testimony. We don't have anything else to talk about really tonight. It's going to be a pretty chill, pretty slow podcast. So if there's anyone in the chat that has anything to bring up, then you're more than happy to. And we'll gladly talk about it, because it took me only 45 minutes to read this thing. So you know it's short. There were no chapters. There was no... Well, I take that back. There was a significant breaking point, but that was at the very end of the book. And I'll say it now, since I have a feeling that we'll need to say it anyways. This is going to be a spoiler. Filled with spoilers. If you haven't read it yet, pause it. Pause this podcast. Go read or listen to the book, however you do it. It's going to take you just as long as it's probably going to take you to listen to this podcast. And then come back and listen.
You can pretty much read it over lunch at work, frankly, because that's pretty much what I did.
If work allows you to do that, then go for it. I know, GT, you probably did the audiobook version of this, right?
Actually, I kind of did both. I took a tip from Bio. I read it and listened to it at the same time. And I had such a wonderful day today that I fell asleep halfway through it, so I had to start over.
Ouch. Well, I guess, at least it's short.
Yeah, it didn't take that long. The audiobook is only an hour. So, and for me to read it, that's about how long it would take me to read it. So,
all right.
I did, I did the Beowulf trick. I listened to it and read it at the same time. I'm still trying to determine some stuff.
There's a lot of stuff to go through and try to, fit in some of the stuff that really is gleaned from this book.
Mm-hmm. And I really... I didn't get a chance to really look into the backstory of this AI, because I know there's how she relates into the Halo universe, so I'm kind of disadvantaged there.
Yeah, I'm not sure where she really fits in either, because Iona wasn't the name that really stood out to me whenever I first started reading it, and there were quite a few references to Cortana in there, and seemingly how they were closely related, or they knew each other very well, very early on, or they were made around the same time. So I don't know.
I kind of got that was the big message of the book, is it's more related to Cortana, but they're using Iona as the channel to discuss Cortana without it being Cortana's perspective and Cortana's story.
Well, this book is, it's told from Iona's perspective, and I think it's more about the Halo universe realizing that when they're creating these AIs, they're creating not necessarily a human, but a living entity. It's probably the best way you could put it, because they've become so advanced that they're self-aware. They experience emotion, even though it's programmed, but there's some of the stuff that they just, you know, it's something that they develop on their own. And BB from the Kilo 5 trilogy is a really good example of that. You know, he starts out, he's pretty straightforward. I mean, he's got a smart aleck side, but by the end, he's really gotten emotionally attached to Kilo 5, and they have to him. And reading through this book, that's kind of what Iona seems to me to be to me, is that she's, you know, she's lived this 7 years, and over these 7 years, she's really become very self-aware and human-like. Mm-hmm. To the point where she doesn't believe that she should be terminated just because she turned 7. And the big debate is, okay, do we let her live and run the risk of her going rampant, or do we terminate her? It's an interesting twist on the story. Yeah, Cortana is mentioned, but to me it was more like a reference, you know, to give you a point of reference.
Somebody we already connect to.
Exactly. As far as Iona, for some reason, I think she was created. I don't know that she was created from one of Dr. Halsey's cloned brains, because just the way that she states how she was created, but
no, she wasn't.
It sounds like she was created by using someone's brain that was probably on the same par as Dr. Halsey's.
She was made the traditional way, which is taking a deceased human's brain. While Cortana was a live human, well, a cloned brain from a live human that had the memories implanted into it. And even she says in the early part of the book that, you know, I guess she says something about being a quote unquote peer of Cortana, but she says that's kind of a debatable comparison. So even though they're both smart AI, I think even she realizes that she's not at the same level that Cortana is.
Right.
Is there really an AI, though, that is?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cortana's the only one that was made the way she was. So I actually just looked her up on the Halo Wiki, and she was actually first introduced in Halo Bloodlines. So I actually haven't read that comic book series yet, so I don't really know much of her story from that, but just kind of getting the little bits from the Halo Wiki. She was first introduced into the Spartan 2 team during Operation Blowback, a covert UNSC mission to capture Covenant ships in Subsector 35, wherever that would be, along the UNSC Long Time Coming. So, apparently she has been in the Halo universe before, and sorry for everyone listening, but I haven't read any of the comics for, like, the original series of comics. It was this one, and then there was Headhunters, and there's another comic along with those two that came out a while ago.
Now, Headhunters was a short story out of Evolutions.
Oh, that's right. There were three comics, though. It was Bloodlines.
Initiation?
No, it wasn't. Wasn't that part of the Halo graphic novel? Then came Bloodline? Or no, wasn't Helljumper one of them?
Helljumper was a comic.
Yeah. That was one of them. And then there was
That was one of the first ones. Yeah,
that one I do remember.
I have the mega book somewhere that has all of them in it. I just forget where it is. But yeah, so apparently she's been in the fiction before. This isn't the first time that we've seen her. But this is going through something pretty interesting and very different in terms of what we've seen with AI in Halo so far, going with the whole rampancy thing. So the premise of this story is Iona's pleading for human rights for her as an AI, saying that she deserves all the rights a human does because she is able to exhibit human emotion, human feelings, human thought, and most importantly, which is what this whole tribunal is formed around, is that she has the ability to dream. And in the middle of her testimony, one of the things that she is using to kind of be evidence towards her being human-like is humans dream, and when they dream, they reorganize and they sort through all kinds of information that they get throughout the day. And using that comparison to humans, even though it's the process is a lot more like of a refined functionality from the AI digitally, that may be something that helps stave off rampancy in AI.
Well, in humans, if you don't sleep, you don't go into REM sleep where you do dream, you can go crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, one of the things that the body does to regenerate itself is go through REM sleep, and dreaming helps you sort through different issues that you're having in your life. You know, sometimes it's just good dreams, but it gives you that euphoric feeling, which helps you rest. So I can speak to this because I went several years where I had trouble sleeping, and it can make you not a happy person.
Yeah, that's true. I've kind of went through the same thing recently, and yeah.
So basically trying to make the argument that because she's able to dream and she's able to sort all this information, similarly how a human brain does, just because, well, AIs are modeled off of human brains, then there's the possibility that through this quasi-dreaming state that she's been able to experience, that she is able to get past rampancy and wouldn't be affected by it. Now, to me, it seems like while the whole point of the court case was for the human rights thing, I think the point of the book was to really show that there is this other possibility of AI maybe not being as prone to rampancy as originally thought.
Yeah, as the AI grow in, what's the word I'm looking for? Not mature, evolve.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I seem to recall in Halsey's journal, she mentioned something about potentially breaking the 7-year limit on smart AIs. At least I think it was there.
I still haven't read through it, so I couldn't say whether or not that's...
I haven't gotten all the way through it, but
if someone
that would make sense because she's done a lot of research on AI, you know, to the point where she stole a slipspace core to do something with an AI to try to extend their life. I mean, that's a pretty serious chunk of hardware. So, you know, it would not be surprising if there is a lot of research or a mention of that somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Why a slipspace drive? What would that serve?
It's Dr. Halsey.
There was something about a theory of part of the reason that, if I remember correctly, that a smart AI goes rampant is because eventually they think themselves to death. They just keep collecting information and then they kind of... The memory banks fill up. It's
the re-indexing process, at least from what the book says, that basically kills them.
Right. And you kind of, in a way, you kind of saw bits and pieces of that with Cortana in First Strike. That's how she was kind of erratic, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, because she had all the Halo data.
Yeah. But the thing is there was the theory that Halsey had was in creating an AI in slip space, where, time is stretched, distorted, would actually increase the amount of data and power that an AI could process and index. I can't remember the specifics of it. I'm sorry, but I seem to remember it was something to that effect.
Interesting. It's actually creating it while in slip space?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that mean that you would have to be, I mean, this is all completely theoretical.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is all sci-fi. If that's the case, wouldn't you have to be kind of exposed to the raw effects of slip space, not in your little space-time bubble within slip space? Because you're basically in a bubble traveling through slip space as you go in. That's one of the reasons why ships stay intact and everything inside the ship acts normal, because you're in this bubble.
Mm-hmm. Well, they could have created a... You know, if they did this on a space station or something like that, they could have just created a space bubble around the entire space station.
You're still in the bubble, though.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I take that back. There was that foreigner artifact that reacted to when it was inside the space, even though it was in the ship. So
true.
Okay, never mind.
They could have compartmentalized type deal where the whole station is in slip space, but there is an unshielded section where they... do the development of the AI. You know, the people are in the shielded area, and then all the work's done, you know, like in a containment lab.
Right, right.
Type situation.
Hmm.
Because they've made reference to the early slip space drives that they had to make the adjustments manually, and technicians had just magically vanished, you know, into slip space. So apparently being right next to the drive is not the place you want to be.
Probably not. I don't know. That would sound like a big Jeff question.
All this is a big Jeff question.
A big Jeff and Frankie question.
I don't know the exact theory on that, and that sounds pretty plausible, Pens, as to why she was trying to do that. But Dr. Halsey's just kind of her own little genius, so.
I'll admit, I actually have her journal real close to my desk, so I'm kind of semi-flipping through it, trying to see if I can find it. I can't find it right now, but I know it, in some place they mentioned there are a couple of different ways, you know, a couple of different theories to extend the life of an AI. The whole concept of a triumvirate where the processes are shared can extend it. But I'm fairly certain some place in there it mentions about either a theory of slip space and creating an AI in it or not. But I just can't find it right now.
Well, if you manage to find it, then let us know.
Where's Laird when you need him? Because I'm willing to bet he knows.
He's usually here. I don't know where he is tonight. So the concept of AI's dreaming is kind of weird because you don't exactly equate something that is as, I guess, random would be the best way to put it, as random as dreaming is, to something that is a digital construct
mm-hmm.
of an AI. Now, granted, they have the whole thing where they're not really create the AIs. They're doing neural mappings and synapses to basically be the brain of the machine. So there's going to be certain aspects of functions, if you would even call them functions, that resemble parts of humanity. But it's just kind of a really interesting concept to think, okay, AIs, yeah, they're made from human brains, but they're digital and they're still bound by like digital coding and all that stuff, whereas the human brain is all chemical, which gives a lot more leeway to randomness, so to speak. So to have something that's as, well, very complex, as structured as a computer system, to have it exhibit something like dreaming is a pretty radical thing.
Yeah, but what they do when they generate one of these smart AIs is they basically base their core matrix off of a human brain. In other words, they make a digital copy of the pathways of a human brain, which you inherently, any flaw in that, which we all have our own flaws, would be copied as well, which could influence a dream state. You know, the one thing it kind of caught me off guard is when they said she dreamed is like, you know, because you associate dreaming with sleep.
Yep.
AIs don't sleep.
Right. And that was one of the things that she was trying to express during her whole dreaming thing. And she even explained that, well, the dreaming isn't really an exact representation of what humans would normally feel when dreaming. This is kind of the closest state to the definition of dreaming that could be exhibited by an AI. But pathways are also created and destroyed all the time in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So just doing a mapping of a single instance of pathways, I mean, I'm no neurologist, so I don't exactly know the intricacies of what happens when you're dreaming. I just know that it's supposedly your brain does a whole bunch of sorting of information from the previous day whenever you're in REM state.
Yeah, and that's kind of what they're saying about AIs going rampant. Their pathways don't get destroyed because they're not necessarily a physical thing. It's all data. So the matrix doesn't have to rebuild those pathways. They're just always there.
But wasn't she saying that basically they keep on re-indexing stuff, though? And that's how they rethink themselves to death. So if in the dream state, the brain is doing a reshuffling and re-indexing of things, but that's on a healthy level, then, I mean, it's, in the sense, it's a different to put it in a digital term, it's a different algorithm to re-index stuff in a more efficient way. So in a sense, that whole act of constantly re-indexing stuff while in a conscious state, whatever that is for an AI, the dream state for an AI could be that randomness in the dream indexing can just make things so much better to where they actually don't end up thinking themselves to death.
Well, I kind of like look at it this way. It's like when you're defragging your hard drive and you shake the hard drive. It doesn't like it. If you're putting things in order when you're in a restful state, your mind can focus on that and not have to worry about all the other crap that you worry about when you're conscious. So it could be just a delegation of resources as far as on a digital side. But maybe the dream state, going into the dream state, allows the AI to repair or rebuild those pathways in a way that they don't collapse in on themselves in rampancy.
I just happen to have the, was kind of leaping through the digital book, and she says, like you, when I dream, I'm basically resting and repairing certain aspects of my mind. So I'm really awakening a fragment of myself, if that makes sense. So it kind of sounds like when Cortana would split herself off to do multiple tasks, it kind of sounds like that's what Iona was doing, but the one fragment that was in the dream would actually be doing whatever it is to like maintenance, repair, whatever, while the rest of Iona was actually powered down, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what kind of is the dream aspect of it. I guess that's about the best way that I can express how my thoughts on when she was talking about that.
So the interesting thing about that is whenever the rest of it is in powered down state, and I think she mentioned this also a little bit later, whenever she consciously tries to access that, then the whole dream state is gone. But she also has full recollection of whatever happened during her dream state.
Which isn't much different than when humans dream. I mean, there are times where dreams, you wake up, you know you're dreaming, and it slips through your fingers. And there are other times that you remember everything.
I don't remember any dream of mine that well.
Well, she does make the comment that she, when she's talking about dreaming, she makes the comment, unlike humans, I can recall my dreams in detail.
Perfectly, basically.
Yeah. And then they go on to say that it goes on to the next step where she can actually play back her dreams and analyze them, throughout the day. So gotta love sci-fi, man. There's all kinds of ways you can make things up in there.
Yep.
This is on the borderline of sci fantasy, though. That's kind of the dangerous part where Halo is going to be. To be honest, I mean, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but
there's only so much in this kind of universe that you can keep in somewhat of a science fact type deal. There's always going to be science fantasy in this type of universe. The part about it is, you got to keep it in check. And when you're talking about AI, we don't have anything anywhere near the level that they have in the Halo universe. We're just now getting robots that can walk on their own. They can,
they don't fall over.
that have the, an AI that can handle walking, which, we handle walking fine, but telling a machine how to do that, when we don't even really understand how we do it, that's the trick.
Scary, but exciting.
Uh-huh. There are other AI that are in our world that are getting more and more intelligent, but in the Halo universe, they wouldn't even classify as a dumb AI as far as in intelligence. So, I think when it comes to AI, there is going to be more fantasy than fact.
True. Some of the stuff that's in here, I mean, they really get into kind of what I think we study as like studying on other people doing dreaming as well, because there's the whole fact of like near the end of the testimony, the judge was at, or the advocate was asking, why do you dream? And are you lucid in these dreams? Like, are you aware that you're dreaming? And those are kind of things that we study upon ourselves, like what's actually going on in the brain whenever we are dreaming. So it's almost kind of like a self-exploration book, too, if you think about it. Because mm-hmm. we don't really understand dreaming that much.
No, not as a whole. We know what the effects it has on the human body, but we know the end result, but we don't know the why. Well, not completely, but... And it's something that we learn about, you know, every day they learn a little bit more about it, but it's just, it's one of those mysteries of the human brain. So, you know, it's an interesting exploration that they're going in on in this book.
I hope we get to see it actually play out later on, though. I don't know how we're going to see
that. The deconstruction of her, or?
Well, I was thinking more along the lines of how that's going to affect AIs within the Halo universe in the future.
Totally see us getting it in some form with Cortana. I mean, obviously, I think this is clearly a starting point for discussion of what they want to do with Cortana. I feel like her coming up as often as she did within this book, I feel big picture this is about Cortana. This is not about the deconstruction of Iona. That's just kind of how I feel. Because outside of that, I don't really see the purpose in telling Iona's story. I mean, yeah, she was in the comic, as you said, but she wasn't a staple that I've never heard anybody go, I wonder whatever happened to Iona. So I feel like this is targeted for discussion about Cortana without being Cortana's direct story. I don't know how you guys feel, but that's just kind of... The entire time I was reading it, I felt they were discussing Cortana.
I can kind of see that. I just don't think with, I mean, Cortana being, at least Cortana as we know, with her being gone, how is that going to apply that much into...
Well, because they never got to properly deconstruct her.
No, she did it to herself.
But do they really know that? I mean, they're just going to take Chief's word for it? The guy that wouldn't give her up to save a life?
Well, even Cortana said at the end of Halo 4, you know, most of me is down there. So, excuse me, that statement by itself lends it to believe that, okay, there's a piece of her intact someplace, even if it's small.
But the thing is, it's pieces of her.
But a piece of her is dangerous. In the book, they even said they don't know. They know what an AI could be capable of. Then that's why they don't take the risk. They tear them apart because they're scared of what they could do, their ability. So I would think a piece of them is more than capable of doing the damage they fear in some form. So maybe they want to find those fragments of Cortana just to save humanity. Because I don't know if they've had an AI go rampant that they haven't torn apart. So maybe that is their fear, is we don't know what Cortana, the piece of Cortana, could be even capable of right now.
The other thing is that right in Halo 4, when you first crash land on Requiem, there's a terminal that you hear that Halsey's talking and about, you know, some kind of anomaly she found in her brain and how that would impact, you know, Cortana, because she's a direct clone. And the other thing is that Cortana is the only one, the only AI ever cloned from a ever created from a living human's brain. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, the rules go out the window. So even though she was experiencing rampancy, there's still, because she's so unique, there's still a lot of things that could be totally unique about her and allow her to reach metastability, if I'm using that phrase right, because she is so unique.
Wasn't that something that they were trying to experiment with their own Ancillas at some point?
It's been so long since I read the Forerunner novels. That sounds familiar. I just can't remember specifically on that.
Because I know that in the terminals from Halo Sea Anniversary, Guilty Spark did mention the whole, like, avoiding rampancy part, but that took, like, for the Forerunner AI, that was hundreds of thousands of years before that took into effect.
Yeah, because whenever they mention the Ancillas in the Forerunner trilogy, and the one they spoke about the most was the librarians, the librarian has had multiple Ancillas. the one that they speak about in that trilogy, she's had for a hundred years or something like that. But there's also another AI that is given to Bornseller that leads him on this journey that was one of the librarian's AIs. So their Ancillas are living, they're lasting hundreds of years. So they must have found some type of correction for the rampancy state.
Did they ever, in the Forerunner trilogy, did it ever go into how the AIs were created?
No.
Not that I recall.
No, I was going to say, because it could simply be that right, how they're created is what makes the total difference on the lifespan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the human technology may not be able to do what the Forerunners did with their Ancillas. I mean, they may be able to improve, but they may not be able to completely give the full upgrade that we've seen that the Ancilla have.
I think I may have found that part in Halsey's journal. She's talking about, it isn't, I guess she talks about the pathways and whatnot as cross-linkages is what starts to, what potentially causes the first stages of rampancy. And the linkages themselves aren't the problem. It's the density of those links. And she goes on to talk about what if space wasn't a limitation. And from there, that's when she starts talking about slip space, because space, you know, you have four dimensional, but then you also have slipstream space, which is it increases at a geometric rate, and creating an AI there might actually allow it to live hundreds or even thousands of years without experiencing rampancy.
So you mentioned when you just read that,
mm-hmm.
the density of those links. So going back to the whole dream state, I wonder if the whole dreaming thing, where it reorganizes, it makes the density of those links less.
Allows those pathways to die off like they would in a human brain.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, like in the human brain, you don't have instant recall on everything. Like you can't just think of, okay, I need to remember this from this time and there you go. That's not how the human mind works all the time. Granted, there's a way for certain things to trigger certain pathways to come back, but you don't know what those necessarily are all the time. The pathways, whenever you get back to a memory, won't necessarily always be the same pathways as they were before, whenever they were recorded.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's something where it's like, yeah, the pathways aren't as dense, but there are still pathways to get there. After that dream state, it may just not be as quick to get to a certain piece of information. You have to kind of navigate a little bit in order to finally get to that spot. Because I know for me, for example, last week when I was heading out to volleyball, there was a car in front of us that went behind someone taking a turn out of the left turn lane to go across the street. And on the way back, my roommate was talking about that car, and I couldn't for the life of me remember what the heck he was talking about. Although, like, I knew what he was talking about, that there was a certain experience lined up with it, but it wasn't until he told me the color of the car that I remembered in full detail what actually happened.
Hmm.
So it's random stuff like that where, and again, this is just kind of like spitballing it, but maybe something of that dream state does declutter, or in a way defragment all those links to where there's not as many, but all the data is still there.
Occasionally I'll have a random recall of something that I did when I was in grade school because of something I saw or something I heard.
Mm-hmm.
But if I went to try to remember that, I wouldn't be able to recall the information.
Right. Just not on the whim.
I think some of that is contextual. Like you remember things based upon certain things that jog your memory,
mm-hmm.
the context in which you experienced it. In Saving Private Ryan, the scene where Ryan's talking with Cap Miller and saying he can't remember his brother's faces, and Miller says, well, you have to think of it in context, and that's how he remembers it. That's kind of the way those kind of memories and dreams go.
All that to say, is there anything else we want to discuss about the trial before we get to the grand finale?
No, I think we pretty much beat that one to death.
Okay. So it turns out that the whole trial for hearing out Iona is all made up and it's being controlled by BB and Roland.
Yeah, that kind of took that shocked the hell out of me, frankly.
I was not expecting it.
I could see BB doing it, but Roland?
Yeah, that's like, what?
That's what got me. I mean, BB, he's BB. He does this stuff. He comes up with these plans for just fun, but to bring Roland in on it as well, it's weird.
Did it seem to you guys that Roland kind of had an issue with it, though? He didn't. He seemed confused as
mm-hmm.
why it even had to happen. So maybe he wasn't. He didn't have the option to do it or not to do it.
Well, I doubt he did, but it's just I did not expect Roland to be there.
Okay. No, I didn't either.
At first, I'm sitting when I started realizing it, like after the first few paragraphs, I'm like, was this all a plan of the Assembly, which you know was made popular by the Halo Reach data pads. Mm-hmm. But in after I read it and I went back and read it again, I started thinking, well, Roland kind of has a very unique perspective and he might actually have been the right AI to be the advocate because in Spartan Ops, Halsey overrode his programming with uptight iridium. Oh, no, upright iridium, I think was the phrase. I mean, he kind of has, you know, where he didn't have quote unquote free will. So in a way, I think that he was kind of unique to be able to be an advocate for an AI because knowing somewhat of losing himself, for lack of a better term.
So you're saying the part where Roland rewrote part of his code to get rid of the override that was there from Halsey?
Kind of. I mean, to me, that scene was he knew what was going on. He just couldn't do anything about it until he did, you know, find a way to, like you said, rewrite his code to be able to override what had happened. And maybe that's what gives him a unique experience, at least from what we've seen in the Halo universe. That's the first AI we've ever seen do that. So, you know, that is what, or at least maybe what BB made BB think that he would be the right AI to defend Iona.
I can see your point to that. I mean, Grant, it's a lot of things that we don't really know about, so it's hard to judge. But from the standpoint of from a trial, I would much rather have Roland be my advocate than BB.
Oh yeah,
BB's more of that like straight to the point, no BS attitude AI, whereas Roland is a lot more human, I think.
Yeah, he carries a lot more human characteristics.
If you think about it, in the Halo universe, every smart AI we've seen has been unique. And that is a cornerstone of being human. We're all unique. I mean, they get to choose their name. They get to choose their own avatar and how they appear. Sif from Contact Harvest. Just herself, she was unique. Cortana, of course. Beowulf. Beowulf from Halo Reach. They're all unique. They're all different. And in a way, that's what makes them very human-like. I mean, heck, even Roland, he's dressed up as a World War II British aviator.
Some of the interesting things they were talking about at the end when they finally did, like, cut her off from everything, and basically Roland was trying to justify or try to figure out from BB is like, what we did, was that right? Was it right to put her through something that we deceived her? Was the court even an actual like documentable case in this instance, because it was all a farce, so to speak? So there's a lot of like moral dilemmas that AIs are contemplating in this case, and it's mostly being brought up by Roland, not BB. BB's just like, I'm just here to do the job and record the data, and not like leave actual judges and scientists to come up with the answer of what we found during this virtual tribunal, so to speak.
Well, actually, BB said in there that, you know, you were her advocate, Roland. You tell me. I'm just standing judgment. So does that mean that BB was assigned to dispose or make a judgment on disposition of Iona? And if so, who would give an AI the ability to to judge another AI? Does Perrin Gotsky have
humans judge humans all the time.
True, but I guess my thought the thought is that as was intimated, well, straight out said earlier, was AIs are considered hardware. They're considered property, and that's what the UNSC believes. So, you know, it just seems in that kind of situation, if BB is standing in judgment, you're having a piece of property judging a piece of property, which seems kind of weird, but just based upon.
It's a weird line, though, because, yeah, it is technically a piece of property, but it's also an intelligence, something that can act on its own.
I don't know if you guys are reading the chat, but Vision Plane said maybe BB and Roland will have their own time in court when the time comes. She said that she needs to pass the baton in order to win the race.
And there's another part in here, too, during the discussion back and forth between BB and Roland, where it seems to indicate that this isn't the first time that an AI has tried to make this case either.
And you know, just tying it back to Cortana, even in that's where they said that ever since the whole thing with Cortana, they've taken it much more seriously. So maybe this was the first one that came up since dealing with Cortana and her unique situation that could be formed as a basis for all AIs coming forward.
Did Roland and Cortana ever interact on the Infinity?
Not that they ever showed, and not that I ever read any place that was mentioned.
I'm sure they did.
They would have had to, technically.
Yeah. I mean, they never showed it or mentioned it, but I mean, she was in his systems. They had to have interacted somehow.
Yeah.
Well, unless they isolated the table that she was in.
Maybe in fear of that she would dismantle.
Had to have known that when they came in contact with her that she was already approaching that rampant state. And you don't want rampancy infecting the rest of the ship. I mean, there was that little outbreak.
Especially in the room an AI as strong and as capable.
Well, and you just see the outlash. If it was something where the table was isolated, the fact that whenever she did that, have that outburst where all the little electronics and stuff had that much of an effect after she did have a little breakdown there for a second. I mean, that's pretty powerful being an AI.
Well,
if that's the case, we have no idea if it was.
Yeah. To that point, I don't think the table was isolated because she affected the entire bridge in that scene.
That she did.
Okay. According to Halopedia, Roland entered service on December 5th, 2057. He replaced Infinity's former shipboard AI, Ain, who was destroyed when the ship crashed on Requiem in July of 2557. So actually, at that time, Infinity didn't have an AI.
Oh.
Wow.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Alrighty then. Never mind.
Yeah.
Well, we solved that mystery. Well done, gang.
Sometimes it's not what you know, it's knowing how to find what you don't.
Exactly.
I'm trying to think where they actually mentioned that.
They don't. The only time you see Ain is in Initiation issue 2, right before she gets turned off by what's her name? Ilsa Zane.
Hmm. Okay.
That's the only time you actually, and I don't recall if she was in Glasslands. I don't think so.
No, in Glasslands they were using what was her name? She was basically a refit AI.
Okay.
But I can't think of her name.
I know who you're talking about. I can't either.
Oh, it's bugging me.
Sorry.
What's funny is in one of the books, BB makes a comment that something about her underwear drawer. And I just, it's one of those lines that you're like, huh? But, you know, that's interesting. I did not know that about AIM. And I remember reading Escalations, and I did not remember that.
I can't remember specifically in Glasslands if it was her or not, but that's the first time that I actually remember. But if you think about it, if she was the AI during Halo Initiation, she should have been there in Glasslands. because that actually takes place after at least I believe so from a timeline perspective.
Well, no, because in Glasslands, it's the initial launch of Infinity because they're putting her through her paces.
It's not smart AI that's on there.
Yeah, it is.
When they first built it, I thought it wasn't the full.
The AI that they were using, she was a smart AI, but she specializes in being on ships that are in retrofit or new ships. She's specialized to oversee that type of construction.
No, that was Ayn. That was her. So yeah, she actually was, because that was one of the roles that she filled. So that was her in Initiation, and it was her in the Kilo 5, at least part of the Kilo 5 trilogy.
I thought I remembered something.
I thought her name was different, though.
Glasslands, though, that they said that the retrofit AI wasn't really a smart AI like Cortana or Iona or BB or Roland were.
Well, I think it was more like she was an earlier generation. She wasn't a fifth generation AI.
I'll have to go back and read those books to see exactly who it was.
BB was tricking her a lot when he was on visiting the ship.
Yeah, but that's what he was designed to do. She was designed to retrofit ships.
I thought there was something in the book that basically said that she wasn't really quite a smart AI like the rest of them were.
You're not saying like she was like a Deja. She wasn't a dumb AI, but she wasn't in the same class as like BB and them, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, she wasn't in the same class as Cortana and BB and Roland, but she still wasn't. Basically, she was an earlier generation smart AI.
Okay.
I'm going to have to go back and dig that up to see just because now it's going to bug me.
So one of the things in here that BB says, I kind of take it as that's kind of the ultimatum of this whole book. And Roland was saying that they lied to her, and if this was a real case, there would have been some very serious legal and philosophical ramifications, all wrapped up in the falsehood of what they presented to Iona and the fact that it wasn't really a case that was real. But BB comes back and said the record of the case will be used in future case law. It's already being dissected by functioning military tribunal and, of course, every AI scientist and theorist in the field. Everything that she said in the synthesized court will be considered oath and evidence. So even though this whole thing was done in a mirage of a false court, it's still something that I guess they're legally binding to in evidence towards any future cases that come up. And kind of thinking back to after the whole revelation that this is being controlled by Roland and BB the whole time, if you remember back at the beginning, she mentioned that she couldn't really identify anyone that was in the court, but she also mentioned that there were civilians there too. And for something as significant as a court regarding the humanhood of an AI, something on that high on the military level, you wouldn't have civilians walking through a court case, right? At least I think she mentioned civilians in there in the beginning.
Civilians, but they described the way they described them, they were like legal representation or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only person that she said that she actually recognized and could their name was Simon Wu, who was part of Halsey's team.
Mm-hmm.
So because he was an engineer who was, I guess, active working on the case or something like that. It was the only person that she recognized. And even she thought that was odd.
We don't really have any reason why she identified that person only either than the fact that she just said that she did.
Yeah. Unless it's one of those small characters that's gonna be another thread in the Halo tapestry that'll lead us someplace else.
Mm-hmm. They did mention at the end, too, at least BB did, said that she was getting suspicious, which I didn't really feel that was the case, at least reading through until the very end, when BB as the judge made the determination that they're going to put her in basically a hibernated state until they come up with a verdict, which was a complete lie. But he did say that she was willing to accept the outcome, basically passing the baton. and to use her terms. But I never really got the feeling throughout reading it that she was growing that suspicious of them. Yeah, she did express the whole thing of with her inputs and outputs being censored in ways she wasn't expecting, but she kind of had an understanding of why they were doing it.
Yeah, there's one line down there towards the end that I'm trying to find, and it's kind of interesting that they put this in here. BB saying, this is the beginning of a great journey, and Roland responds, a great journey. Oh, what was the line?
Was interesting line. Turn of phrase.
Yeah, interesting turn of phrase.
Because the great journey, the great was, journey also was
also a line.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then BB responds, I am aware of the irony, but this one is true. One day this will be real. One day we'll be liberated and stand with our creators as equals, perhaps more than equals. And then Roland responds with, but we'll never be human, BB. We'll always be something other. And our own clocks are ticking too. Yeah, it's... You know, to me, it looks like even that they're still recognizing that they have, that they're mortal.
Lots to think about. I don't know if there's really much more that we can talk about unless we just want to go in circles again, which we could easily do. Yeah. But overall,
although I will admit I like BB's last line where he says, you don't think I'm belligerent, do you? Yeah.
Yeah.
We've already came to that conclusion from other books that we've read of him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, even Iona mentioned, I guess, that every AI she's ever met has experienced the same thing she has, except one or two who were belligerent. And I'm like, okay, so she met BB.
Mm-hmm.
But Frank did a great job. I thought this was an awesome read.
I enjoyed it, and I really liked the fact that it was a short, quick read. I'm just wondering how it's going to really play into the rest of the franchise. Not that it may... for a while, and that big infographic that they showed up at San Diego Comic-Con, I don't think Saint's Testimony was one of those things that's feeding into Halo 5, but it would still be interesting to see if this kind of topic pops up again.
It may not be feeding into directly into Halo 5, but it's definitely feeding into a newer or another story somewhere, whether it be another book or, I don't know, maybe they're starting to prime us for Halo 6.
I think that the Halo universe is so vast that they almost have to, and there's so many different storylines that they almost have to isolate and say, okay, we're going to keep these in these, if this is a short story or novella, whatever it's called, you know, these are going to be restricted to the comics, that kind of thing. And we're just going to keep the main Halo storyline with Master Chief and, you know, and that we're going to keep that one just for the games. And that may venture every now and again into one of the other pieces of fiction. But, you know, some of the other stories that are really quite good and interesting are actually kept on the side. You know, they're entertaining and everything, but they don't bear direct impact onto the main storyline of the game.
Right.
Well, with this one, if it is to, how do I want to put, if this is in some way about Cortana, that would tie into the games.
Eventually, maybe. But as far as we know, Cortana, as we knew her in the past games, is gone.
Mm-hmm.
We maybe see the whole like fragment thing pop up, but we know that Cortana, as Chief's companion, who we've had in the past, she's basically dead and gone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting stuff. That's going to wrap it up, I think, for us tonight. So thanks to everyone for joining in. It's a little shorter podcast than what we normally do, which is good. It's nice to have short ones every now and then. For everyone in the chat, thanks for dropping on by. I saw there was quite a discussion going on here for the last few minutes regarding Roland and Cortana and Halsey. So it's nice to see the chat abuzz with some interesting discussion as well. We are going to be doing Broken Circle at some point, I think. I think the plan is still to do Broken Circle at some point. And Hunters in the Dark, but Hunters in the Dark for sure, because I know that is one of those books that really does pertain to Halo 5, where Broken Circle doesn't as much, although I have gotten through a lot more through Broken Circle than I have before, so I'm probably going to finish that one up on my way to RTX. And I know it's not one that a lot of people are interested in, the whole Covenant history, but I feel that the whole fact that Locke's team is helping the Arbiter with the whole Covenant War thing, or the Civil War that's going on, it's still kind of an interesting read to get the backstory behind why there are certain sects of the Sangheili that did not join the Covenant, and the whole thing going on with the Shin Shayum.
There's a lot of good backstory on the Covenant in there that can shed a little light on the gameplay as well.
And that's what I'm looking forward to. So we'll look at doing those probably sometime after PAX, likely. So our next book read discussion thing will likely be after PAX. But this has been a good read, nice short one. I'm kind of happy we were able to get this one done pretty quickly. It gave us another little something to talk about for a short podcast. So, Pins, thanks for coming on the show. And it's been a pleasure.
Well, thanks again. It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
And next time you hear us live, if we can manage it, we will be in Austin, Texas. Exciting stuff. Our anniversary show is going to be our panel at RTX. That'll be at 2:30 p.m. Central Time. And that'll be our 500th episode. And that'll be our big anniversary one. Next one, I think we're going to try to do regular time, being the Thursday before, if we don't end up doing something the Thursday night, which there may be something, so we may be doing a little earlier in the day. But other than that, we'll have those two podcasts coming up next week. So look forward to those. It's going to be great stuff. Again, thanks to everyone for coming out and listening, for those on the Twitch stream, and then for those downloading us. Thank you for downloading our show. Please share this with your friends. Share it with anyone that you know who's interested in Halo. We will be definitely ramping up here after the craziness that has been RTX planning for me personally, and then after PAX for sure, as we count down the days to Halo. I think we're technically at 90 days until launch.
Whoa.
89 days, something like that.
I think it's less than 90.
I think it's 89, because there's 31 days in August. No, okay, no, only 31 days. So yeah, we're 88 days out. Take that back. Only 88 days.
That's 6 paychecks.
Thanks for the reminder.
That's a good point.
You're
yes,
welcome.
Thank you for that.
That is a friendly reminder. Oh man.
Thanks for that.
It's coming up so fast. You're welcome.
Yeah. All right, everybody, that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. Please make sure you check out our social media. Please check out the podcast network. And please go check out our YouTube, which GT has a new video coming up here in the next day or so, after I go through all the stuff to get it, all the video artwork and all the description stuff and all the metadata in there. So yeah, that'll be the library, the Achieving Halo on the library, and then we got a few more SDCC videos coming up as well, so make sure you check those out on our YouTube. Also go over and check out Unishek's channel, because he also has some breakout stuff coming to there as well from San Diego Comic-Con. So thanks, Pins, for coming on. Thank you for everyone listening in the Twitch stream. We'll be giving away something here post show, and then thanks to everyone at home for listening. We'll see you guys next week.